Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Savage Starlight. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO Max's The Last of Us. Tonight, we're talking about episode 4, Please Hold My Hand. Anthony, I'm scared. I haven't done one of these live shows by myself in so long. Jim's not here. Presumably, he's passed out. Will you hold my hand?
I'm happy to reach into the darkness, Aaron, and grip those white knuckles.
Now, I think it's unlikely that the Bald Move community is not aware of your existence. But Anthony, what's your beat?
What's my deal? What's my deal? Yeah, you can catch me over at Electric Boogaloo. We're covering Clash of Kings chapter by chapter. And this week we're going to have Oxford researcher Kate Ollie to talk about women in the medieval period with a great Arya chapter. But let's talk Tilu, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. What did you think? So you are a Last of Us enjoyer as far as the HBO show, but you're not a video game player, correct?
Not a video game player, and I'll be honest, a little bit reluctant after the first episode, and you know, sticking around because you know I've heard good things, and of course, blown away by the last episode, and I felt like this episode was a great follow up to the story of Frank and Bill. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I am a video game player of The Last of Us as well, so I'm always kind of wondering where this is going to map back onto the source material, but I feel like, you know, we're still, you know, all the action and all the events of the show just seem to further deepen our appreciation for the characters of, you know, Ellie and Joel. And we get to see some new facets to their characters. Yeah. The fact that Ellie's might not as innocent as we might have as presupposed. Seems mm-hmm. like she's got some experience hurting people before. Wondering when we'll find out more about that. But also, like, you also get to see the lighter side of Ellie. She's got her joke book out. She's mm-hmm. she's needling Joel, who's kind of resistant to her charms until the very end, where he relaxes enough to apparently fall into a trap.
Oh my gosh. I mean, this episode, people were a little bit worried about the last episode not focusing on Joel and Ellie enough, because, you know, how are we going to bond these two characters together over 8 episodes? This episode established Ellie as a wounded creature and Joel as a wounded creature, which we already knew, of course. And their wounds reflect each other, and they found a connection. And, you know, we saw Ellie cry. You know, I think we can put to bed the theories that she's a budding sociopath or something. We saw Joel crack a smile and laugh, so they actually have a connection. We know that Joel is afraid of such connections because he's afraid of being hurt again. So I think this episode was brilliant. What did you think?
Yeah, I also I think any zombie show has to do a good job of establishing, you know, what the threats are. You know, we've seen a little bit of the infected. But this is the first time they establish, you know, living, breathing people as a threat. And when you meet them, they do not seem like monsters. They seem like normal people. It seems like they are some sort of freedom fighting group that has overthrown the local quarantine zone, overthrown Fedra. We've seen in previous episodes that Fedra are a bunch of thugs. So it's like, hey, that's not necessarily a bad goal, but, you know, revolutionary zeal and fever can get the best of people. And we see, it seems like there's an indiscriminate execution of doctors. There's obsession with finding resistance people mm-hmm. who I forget exactly what the word she used. And it's funny because, like, it's all in the context of Joel's description of people, whether they're joiners, you know, like, contrasting his brother who always wanted to be a hero, joined the military, joined all these different groups, always wanted to try to make the world a better place versus Joel, who I guess is a not joiner.
He's the ultimate not joiner, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we see that, like, where joining can sometimes take you to bad places because maybe it's good to be. It looks like this group is literally called the People. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. The trucks are emblazoned with We the People. Joel calls the them people. Just people. But, like, if you're inside that group, everything looks a lot different than your outside because we see how outsiders are treated as group. It's essentially you're used as a resource. If they can get you and take you, it wouldn't go good. So I always like to see Melanie Lewinsky. You know, sometimes she's in heroic roles that you root for, but she's really good at just playing a real bastard of a person. And
I remember her from Don't Look Up. I'm not sure what else I've seen her in.
She's been in Castle Rock, which was the Stephen King kind of, I forget, was that on Amazon? And then recently, she's in Showtime's Yellow Jackets, which is fantastic. Okay. We're going to be covering season two here in a couple weeks, maybe a month or so. So, she's a formidable presence. And, you know, her with this paramilitary group behind her looks to be pretty dangerous.
Let me ask you a question. So I'm not a video game player.
Right.
And so just simple yes or no, we'll avoid spoilers. Did we meet anyone in this episode that is a prominent video game staple?
Oof. I'm going to go with mildly interesting because I don't want to say too much. Let me ask you a couple serious questions. Okay. Melanie Lewinsky's Kathleen is with her lieutenant. Mm-hmm. I think I heard that this lieutenant guy, who's I think his name is Perry, is played by the guy who voices Tommy, who is Joel's brother in the video games. So there's another kind of cool video game connection. I might be wrong on that. This is all very... I literally woke up like an hour and 15 minutes ago. If you don't know, the reason Jim's not with me... It's because Jim and I do an annual 24-hour charity stream. We had a ton of fun over the last 24 hours. We raised north of $22,000, $23,000 for the Cure Alzheimer's Fund. Mm-hmm. But it wiped us out. And I do a little bit better on the rebounds than Jim. So he's still asleep. I'm doing that here.
If someone was creeping up on Jim right now, they could be walking over glass.
On their hands, cartwheeling across it, and you just go over and just gank him. So I think that's true. Let me ask you a couple questions as a non-video game player. What did you make of the collapsed ceiling, the recessed floor that was moving?
Okay, I was going to ask you this question. Now here's my take on it, and I don't really know what to think about this, but if you were going to bury a bunch of bodies under a floor and then concrete over it, eventually those bodies would... Now, I have no idea. I've not played the game. I have no idea if this is anywhere near the mark. Those bodies would decompose, and the concrete would then... I mean, you would have to have a lot of bodies under that floor for it to be depressed that much. But then, of course, I'm thinking... Of course, if you bury bodies under concrete, they're going to be dead. And so I don't know how that works with the mud. I mean, so I don't that was my best guess. That was my best guess, is that you've got decompressed bodies under there.
Yeah. That's interesting. So if they're decomposing, they're outgassing, they're shifting around. Maybe
but
they're mushroom
clearly
people.
There's like a monstrous force under there that freaked them out.
Yeah. So that'd be interesting to keep her eye on. In that same building, they found a little hidey hole where people had run out of food. It looked like there were some kids' drawings. Did you notice anything about the two kids at the end of the episode?
Well, I was assuming that they are Henry and Sam, who we hear name-checked earlier in the episode.
Right.
But again, that's just an assumption. Did I notice anything about them? They had face paint? Did I notice
that? At least the youngest had what looks like a Harlequin mask painted on his face.
Okay.
And that, I think, if you're astute, you could, you know, yeah, I think you've made the correct connection with the names. And I think the interesting thing is, you know, when you hear Kathleen talking about Henry, he's this counter-revolutionary figure that is murking everybody and organizing mm-hmm. his mass resistance. And, you know, you see the place where they're hiding up and you see evidence of child drawings and you're like, well, what the hell? You know, is Henry a father? Does he have a small child with him? And then you realize that they're both essentially children. And this is who the people are hunting down in, what is this, Kansas City? I think it's Kansas City.
It's Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah. So there is, I think it's really interesting that you've got this one group that's in hysterics about finding mm-hmm. these terrorist leaders. And then you meet them at the end of the episode and you wonder, you know, are they really that bad? So yeah, that's something that juxtaposition about in groups and out groups and villains and what makes them tick. I mean, it's something that's super interesting to Druckmann and probably Mazin too. So
this episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right. Let me ask you a question. So earlier in the episode, they're at this sort of driving the entire plot at this point, but Joel makes a decision to go through the city to find the on-ramp. What was the alternative?
You know, I don't know, because that's what I was thinking. Like, wouldn't you want to avoid the major cities until you get to the place where you're looking for Tommy? But, like, wouldn't you want to take the bypass? You would never want to go to, like, the downtown area.
I can't figure it. Now, I've driven through Kansas, St. Louis before.
Yeah.
I mean, I would want to find back roads. What, you know, they've got a map. So why go through a city center? To me, it felt like, and of course, you're approaching a city like that. There's going to be like 9 exits that you just passed. Mm-hmm. If you're actually in the city center. I did not understand what the choice was.
Yeah.
Clearly, he's making a choice that's driving the plot, but I don't know what the alternative was.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking of judging on that lines, because again, you know, Joel getting stuck in a city is kind of how things go in a video game, but I've never really sat and thought about, like, what were the other, maybe it's more of like, it sounds like their conception of how gas goes bad is it eventually loses its you know, energy value, and it's essentially water, and instead of going, you know, getting 20, 30 miles at a gallon, maybe you're only getting 1 or 2 miles at a gallon. Maybe you want to stay near the well-traveled places to have to ensure that you have a constant supply of gas, but.
Right. Yeah. You can't be on back roads the entire time because
you need to find
a bunch of cars. Right.
But I don't know how smart that looks in retrospect. Now you have no truck, no supplies, no gas, and you're being hunted by a bunch of crazy people. I thought it was really artful how, I thought they're making a direct parallel between the mushroom folks who congregate in these large areas and have tendril networks that when you step on them, it brings the whole city down on you. And you also have people who don't have tendril networks, but they can, like, talk and communicate, and you killed 2 of them, and now you have, when they panned over this throng of people in the square, I'm like, this is a very clear parallel to the mushroom people that were in Boston that are going to be summoned down onto the Joel and Ellie's heads. I thought that was really cool. There's a commonality between those two organisms and how they're going to treat and be perceived by Joel and Ellie.
Okay, now you got me thinking about the big depression on the floor again. Does this mushroom system have something like a mothership, kind of like a big fungus? Is there a giant mushroom hive mind?
Did you ever play Metroid? Is there a mother brain that they've got underground? I don't know. Interesting.
All right.
Now, we have been looking for Savage Starlight, the graphic novel that is a collectible. It's not really a game. It's not really a plot element. It's a collectible. That's what we named our podcast after. Once again, Ellie picks up a magazine and is thrilled, and I got my hopes up briefly. And it's a men's nudie magazine. It's one of Bill's dirty books.
Mm-hmm.
They're fucking with me, Anthony. I don't know. They're fucking with me.
Yeah.
Any other random thoughts? Because the only one I've got is, as a parent, it made me so uncomfortable to watch Ellie playing with a gun. Like, that's my greatest fear. Yeah. Like, a 14-year-old just racking and shooting and pew-pewing into a mirror. Like, oh my. Like, that was honestly one of the most stressful scenes in the whole whole night.
Yeah. No, I felt the same way. And I was thinking back, like, when I first went into my father's closet and took out his gun. Well, he wasn't there. You know, I wasn't supposed to.
You
do it,
did
before.
That?
Of course I did.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I would never.
As a kid, you never did this?
No. So, cause I don't know, man. My dad put the fear of God into me. Uh-huh. Like, when I was like 5 or 6, he took me outside with a shotgun. He filled a empty milk jug with red food coloring, and he shot it from about 12 feet away with no ear protection. And he's like, this is what this machine is designed to do, and you never ever ever touch it without me present. And I was like, yes sir. So no,
my dad did the same thing,
and it just didn't take. You're more of an Ellie type, I guess.
I noted that there was no flashback this episode, the first episode without a flashback. Which I've kind of enjoyed all of the flashbacks so far. I mean, you could say the last episode was like a full episode flashback for the most part, given the length of the episode and basically all of the Bill and Frank stuff is a flashback. So this episode was a little bit shorter, no flashback. How did you feel about that?
I like it. I've talked about how I think as the golden age of television continues to develop, it seems like a new trend that I'm seeing is, instead of creators making kind of uniform length episodes that are going to be easy to cut commercials around and stuff like that, they're like, we're on a streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
What if we make these episodes be as long as they need to be to do the thing that we're wanting to do with them? And we've seen lengths of Last of Us has been hour 15, 55 minutes. Today was like a 43. I really like that. Like, there's no fat on the episode. You never feel like there's just kind of a do nothing scene, and it does exactly what they're wanting you to do, and it leaves you at an exact dramatic point that makes you want to watch the next. So I like that. I'm kind of with you that I have enjoyed the flashbacks. I don't know that we're done with flashbacks, but this seemed like a very trim episode that didn't need it.
As an author, I try to make my chapters pretty close to the same length. And I'm wondering if I had a script that was a little bit this length, I would think, I would like to see a flashback of like the Melanie Lynskey character.
Was she like 20 years ago?
Yeah. How did Kansas City go down 20 years ago? But I mean, I can't really complain. I just noticed that there were no flashbacks. And I would just be tempted to add a 5-minute prologue on there.
I also really like the desolate vistas. This is something that I think The Walking Dead did well, when you're just driving around, you're riding around, and you see like this train that was on a collapsed bridge. You see all these tanks, like what Joel said. I thought that was poetic. It's like these machines were designed to defeat the wrong enemy, and now they're just kind of scattered about left. You see, you know, like the United States itself is kind of a rotting corpse in this show, that you see all this once great, you know, all this concrete and steel and the powerful defense, and how it was ultimately Nothing at all. And the other thing, once you get out, when Ellie and Joel were camping, just the stars.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that, like, even 300 years ago, everyone could just look up no matter where you were and you saw this glorious sight. And for many of us that live in a city, even us in rural areas, like, there's only a very few places in the country you can go that's not, like, 50, 60 miles offshore that can get you the original unspoiled night sky. And
yeah,
I thought that was a profound moment too, looking up and just seeing the glory of the heavens.
When they were in the woods, cause I know that this is being filmed in, north, you know, the lower mainlands in Canada,
right?
Outside Vancouver. I lived there for a bit and it was a little bit nostalgic. I mean, everything to me felt like, yeah, this tracks with my experience of that area of the country. I just wanted to ask you a question that it's bothered me for the last four episodes. It didn't come up in this episode, but is there an in-show explanation for why the Firefly logo is a dragonfly?
Oh, I think you're supposed to understand it's a fire. It's actually a fire. Yeah, I mean, it's
have you seen a firefly? It doesn't look anything. That looks like it's a dragonfly logo.
Yeah, I guess if you were to highly stylize the beetle with its, yeah, no, you're. It does look more like a dragonfly than a firefly. But it is supposed to be a firefly.
Do we have an art director that doesn't understand the difference between those two bugs?
Well, the thing is Firefly is just not badass looking enough. So you just had to really angle it and make it, you know, look menacing to.
So I would like an answer.
Organization.
If a listener has an answer for me on this, I would love to hear their explanation.
Okay. We got anything else that we want to talk about in the instant take, or are we ready to see what the Bald Move community has for us?
One more question.
Do it.
And that is, do you think that game players are going to be pleased with this episode?
I was, because I felt all of the feelings that you feel entering combat in this game, where it kind of comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Everything was kind of peaceful and chill, and then these people or these infected are on you, and it's like those intense moments of terror. The fact that I really felt it when that kid flipped on him, you know, like when he was the last one alive and he knew he was going to die. And suddenly he's like, the fighting's over. You can take me to mom. Everything will be okay. And he like trying to make that connection with Ellie. And Ellie realizing, oh, my God, this guy is my counterpart. I am him. He is me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy feeling like maybe he could talk his way out of it. And then Joel recovering and grabbing his knife and that kind of stuff where you can hear, you know, like these people are trying their best to kill you and you kill one of them and then they have this grief reaction or anger and you're like, oh, God. Yeah. And the way it looked like you're going from building to building, like Joel wrecking in that front window and slamming into that bank of washers. I believe that's literally the way that encounter starts in the video game. So I think they're capturing it very well. The kind of co-op dynamic that Ellie and Joel have where they back each other up. The Joel surprise, like if Joel had his way, Joel probably dies in this episode because Ellie doesn't have a gun and I don't know if she can take this kid without it. So
yeah, you kind of saw that coming though, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah, that was sort of, as soon as she put the gun in the backpack, that seemed like that was bound to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, just a shout out to our friends at the Lorehounds who are also covering this show.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a great job in their coverage as well. So I just wanted to call out, you know, the fine work that they're doing for Bald Move as well.
And while you're doing that, shout out your own work here one more time before we get to
absolutely,
the
instant take. Yeah. We're going through Clash of Kings chapter by chapter this week on Electric Boogaloo. We're having Oxford researcher Kate Ollie on to talk about an Aria chapter. And she's a professional medievalist, so that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bring your whole thing is you bring a lot of subject matter experts to kind of, it's not just A Song of Ice and Fire fanboys and girls. They also have some relevant expertise to bring to the discussion, which
we try to do a close reading of every chapter, and of course, you know, I'm always looking for a new take on you know, Martin's vision of the medieval period, and of course sometimes it's in line, sometimes it's not in line with our world, and I always find that fascinating.
Well, thanks for coming on and helping me replace Sleepy Time Jim. We are not done with Anthony. We have the instant talk portion where club members have queued up and they're going to be asking us questions and making observations through YouTube chat, so we'll be getting to that really quick. If you're not a club member, this is where you get off. TLOU, TLOU at baldmove.com is where you send us feedback for Thursday's feedback episode. Of course, we'll have the full coverage, scene by scene recap and in-depth analysis with Jim in tow on Tuesday. And we'll be doing this again on Sunday night. I think we're actually going to flip the dynamic. Jim's going to have a co-host and I, will be away with my family watching the Super Bowl. So we're going to take turns. We're going to separate the main party. Again, thank you, Anthony.
How do they join the club?
Support.baldmove.com if you want to get access to this and all of our other great bonus content. And also, you can follow us on Twitter if you want to keep up with all the releases. Twitter.com/baldmove. All right, that concludes the instant take portion. Let's get into the instant talk.